Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Coming at you on a Wednesday. We're almost done with the regular season. We have a great podcast with you for the middle of this week, coming down the home stretch. Recorded with Connor Hughes. So Connor Hughes is the beat reporter for the New York Jets. We recorded this about a week ago, but completely relevant because we talked just very generally about this team, had a great conversation about what it is to, cover the NFL versus the NBA, storylines between the two leagues. Obviously talked a lot about the comparison between these two franchises. If you're a Knicks fan, you're going to enjoy this. If you're a Jets fan, you're really going to enjoy this. If you're a sports fan, you're going to enjoy this because Connor's great, covers the Jets, but he's a massive, massive Knicks fan. So he gave some really great insight into the team and just in general. So that conversation is coming up. Second thing I want to say, I tried to get to everybody. But in case I missed you, if you reached out and wished me a happy birthday, which was earlier this week, I just want to say thank you. I don't like my birthday. I don't like getting older. I am not, despite the fact that I am in front of the camera for YouTube live streams and, this podcast and whatever, I'm not very much for unwarranted attention. So birthdays definitely make me uncomfortable. But for anybody who reached out with a happy birthday wish, I just want to say thank you. If I have not gotten to you, already. And if I have gotten to you, thank you again. Third thing, last thing, recording this intro before the Knicks play their game against the Lakers on Tuesday night. And also, just as importantly, before the Heat and the Celtics play their game on Tuesday night. Now, why is that relevant? Well, it's relevant for a couple of reasons. One, if you want to hear my thoughts on the Knicks-Lakers game and potentially my thoughts about the Knicks clinching a playoff spot, which is possible based on how things go tonight. Cause if the Knicks win and the Celtics lose, the Knicks are in. Just refresh your podcast stream and you could hear the post game live stream thoughts in podcast form, or you could just go to the YouTube channel. But I actually want to take a step forward because as I said, after the Knicks played the Clippers and dispatched the Clippers as it were on Sunday, I think they're in. They're going to get in. It would take them losing the rest of their games and the Celtics winning the rest of their games and other things to happen as well for the Knicks to knock it in the playoffs. I think they're going to be in. I think now the attention has turned to, what happens in tiebreaker scenarios? So I'm going to break it down very simply. Two-team tiebreaker scenarios just go by head-to-head matchups. So if the Knicks end up in a two-team tiebreaker with the Heat, they lose, because they've lost all three games against the Heat. If the Knicks end up in a two-team tiebreaker, with the Hawks, they win because they swept the Hawks this year. And if they end up in a two-team tiebreaker with the Celtics, it depends on the last game of the season. So let's hope it doesn't come down to that. Now, three-team tiebreaker, a little bit more complicated, because three-team tiebreaker, the first thing that you look at is division winner. This is not so great for the Knicks. Here's why. If the Knicks end up in a three-team tiebreaker, the odds are that they are going to end up in a three-team tiebreaker with the Hawks and the Heat. If they're in a three-team tiebreaker with the Hawks and the Heat, one of those teams will be the division winner. And guess what? It's going to be the Hawks. That's already decided. Which means the Hawks will emerge victorious, and then it defaults to the next stage of the three-team tiebreaker, which is head-to-head matchup, which the Knicks lose against the Heat. So again, three-team tiebreaker scenario, Knicks-Hawks-Heat, Hawks 4, Heat 5, Knicks 6. If somehow, and I'm not even sure this is mathematically possible, but if the Knicks end up in a three-team tiebreaker with a non-division winner. So basically, this would entail the Heat or the Hawks winning the four seed outright. And then the Knicks ending up in a three-team tiebreaker in spots 5, 6, and 7 with the loser of that division and the Celtics. Then it gets a little more complicated because, and it's still too early to say. And it may come down to the last game of the season. So, if you're a Knicks fan and you're simply rooting for them to get in, A, you may have already gotten your wish. B, root against the Celtics. If you are rooting for them to get in the 4 or 5 spot, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to root for the Knicks to end up in a 2-team tiebreaker with the Hawks, or you're just going to want to root for the Knicks to win the 4 spot outright. Either of those two things are good. Anything else, 3-team tiebreaker with Hawks and Heat, 3-team or 2-team tiebreaker with the Heat, that's no bueno. I think I got that all correct. If I did not get that correct, you can address your angry hate mail to at Andrew Claudio on Twitter. No, I'm kidding. No, that's on me. So I think I got that right. As best as I could tell, that's all correct. And if I haven't, feel free to reach out to me and yell at me. I think that's it. So without further ado, here's my conversation with the New York Jets beat reporter for The Athletic, Connor Hughes. Joining me now on the Knicks Film School podcast, if you are a football fan in New York, and who is not a football fan in New York or anywhere in this country, you know this person very well because he has been covering the Jets for a very long time. He has been doing so for The Athletic for a while now, and his like everybody at The Athletic, even though I like to make fun of Mike Borkanoff, he's quite good. He's excellent. Connor Hughes, what's going on, Connor? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Dude, this is a blast. I, you know, it's very cool for me anytime I get to talk to somebody who covers a team, whether it's an NBA team or an NFL team, because I just, you know, I find the work so fascinating. And when you're as good at it as you are, I find it even more fascinating. So thank you for being a part of the show.
Yeah, no problem, man. I'm excited. Like I said, I've been... The Knicks are finally fun to watch again. So I've been starting to catch up on everything again, going full circle. So I'm happy to be on this one. This is one of those where I've started listening. I told you my buddy listens to this show all the time. He's the one who turned me on to you. So I'm looking forward. I'm excited to be here. It's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to hear that. So I think, and it's the reason I wanted to do it, because I think, you know, in this town, you know, narratives are everything. And I feel like the narrative surrounding the Knicks and the narrative surrounding the Jets often go hand in hand, just because the two organizations have been just such shit shows for, not forever, but for a while now. So let me start with that. What is it like covering an organization that has kind of, I don't want to say hasn't been able to get out of its own way, but has had their issues getting out of their own way?
Yeah, it's been different, man, because like the weird thing is like the Jets had their success before I came around. So my first year covering them in some capacity was 2014. So I was there in a part. I mean, I was still in college, so I was there in a part-time basis in 2014. Was there much more in 2015, and then I got my full-time job covering them for the Ledger in 2016. And aside from that 2015 year where you had the revival of Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brandon Marshall and Todd's first year and all that stuff, I mean, the Jets have been a bad football team. You know, they were very bad in 14. They were very bad in 16. They were very bad in 17 and 18. And then they got Sam, and they were, you know, in 2019, they weren't good again. In 2020, they went 7-9. So they were at least somewhat competent and ended the season well, set high expectations for this past year. And then they go 2-14. So it's been weird, but I think what the problem the team has had is just the running of the show is that they just haven't had the right person calling the shots. And when Mike Tannenbaum was here, he got the Jets to a point where they were pretty good, you know, because they made those two AFC championship runs. And then that relationship and the Rex Ryan tenure kind of ran its course. Jets wanted some new blood. And that's when things really started to get bad, because they hired John Idzik, who was given 2 years, was very bad during those 2 years. Obviously, it didn't show enough progress, so the Jets fired him after those 2 seasons. They brought in Mike Maccagnan, and for the next 4 years, 5 off seasons, I mean, he ran the team into the ground, man. I mean, the draft picks that they had and that they made, you know, that's supposed to be your meat and potatoes. That's supposed to be where you really build a team.
Sure.
And he literally drove the team into the ground. I mean, the Jets have no one on their roster right now from the 2015 or 16 off seasons. I think.
Oh my God,
Marcus May. Marcus May is the only one left from 17. So like when you are royally missing on your draft picks like that, it's tough to build a contender. And I think where the Jets really made their biggest mistake was when Christopher Johnson stuck with Mike too long, because that's one of his biggest flaws. One of his biggest flaws when he took over for Woody is that he was just too trusting and too trusting to the wrong people. Should have let Mike Maccagnan go the same time he let Todd Bowles go. And if he did, maybe the Jets are in a different position. But the change now and where things are a little bit different now is I genuinely do believe that the Jets have the right guy calling the shots in Joe Douglas. Like, I think that he's a general manager that's going to be the right one to kind of get this team righted and start doing some good things.
And he came aboard, correct me if I'm wrong, this is his second or third season that he's going to be the in charge.
Yeah, so it's funky because it's his third year, but it's his second off season. So the Jets, very unorthodoxly, if that's a word. Fired Mike Maccagnan after the 2000. So they let Mike Maccagnan run the 2019 coaching search for Adam Gase. They let him run the draft. They let him run the offseason. And then they fired him. Then they realized, like, holy cow, this guy shouldn't be doing this. They let him go. So they hired Joe a couple weeks, month or so after that. But he came in after the draft, after the free agency had already happened. So last year, 2020, the pandemic year, was his first offseason where he actually had a draft and free agency. And then this was his second. So technically he's been there 3 years, but this is really just his second offseason.
It just hit me. Full disclosure, my wife is, I hope she doesn't mind me saying this. She's a closeted Jet fan. I think she actually has a shirt that real fans wear green or something. It's pajamas, does not come outside of the house. She was a once proud Jet fan. I am somewhat up to date on the team, but yet it hasn't hit me until now hearing you talk about this. That reminds me a lot of Phil making the Nilakina pick. And then it was 4 days later, 5 days later. He got axed. Was there, cause in the Knicks fan base, I don't know if there was uproar over that, but there was definitely some like, now you do it really.
Yeah.
What was the reaction like to, the waiting until after the coaching search and the offseason to fire, the Maccagnan?
Shock, dude. And like the true story about this is like, so during the draft, I got a call from one of the people that I know within the league, one of my best sources that called me and he goes, I got something for you. And this is literally after the first round of the draft. So I don't know how close you've, there's the Thursday is the first round, sure, Friday, yeah, second and third round, and then Saturday is fourth on. And he calls me before the start of the second round. He goes, I got something for you. He goes, Mike's going to get fired after the draft. And I'm like, bullshit. Like literally I bullshitted him. I was like, dude, I was like, you're trying to get me fired. I was like, I'm not running. Like, that's bullshit. He goes, I'm telling you, dude, he goes, it's going around the league right now. He goes, it is the hot topic. Like everyone's talking about it. Like Mike's going to get fired. So I was like, I literally said to him on the phone. I was like, dude, I was like, what team lets the general manager pick the coach, run the free agency, run the draft, and then fires him? What team does that? He goes, Connor, I'm telling you it's going to happen. So I'm like, I'll dig lightly. I was like, but I'll dig. I called two more people that I know around the league. Both of them were like, yeah, I heard that. I was like, shit. So that's not a story that you can just run as a rumor. Like you need something that's a little concrete. So I had gone to like a couple people in the Jets that confirm or deny these type of things. Okay. And I was like, I heard this. I was like, I hear it from people that I trust. Like I'm not running. Like this isn't like third string agent, low level scout. These are like people that I trust that were the same people that helped me a lot with stories that I broke that are true that are telling me this now. And the response that basically I got from the Jets was like, you realize how that would make us look? No, we're not going to do this. And obviously now what I found out in hindsight in years is that this was like coming from like up, like there were like two people that knew these conversations were going on. It was like a coach and ownership were like the only two that knew these conversations about Mike losing his job were going around. So the people I checked in to confirm it didn't know. So they were like, no way that happens. Sure enough, 2 weeks later, I happened to be sitting at this desk scrolling through Twitter and I see the press release come across and it's Mike Maccagnan's fired.
So you did not run at all. You didn't intimate.
I mean, no, when I had it denied as strongly and as vehemently as the Jets denied it, like the Jets denied it heavily. And so when the Jets denied it heavily, what am I supposed to like at that point? It's like normally when you have a scoop that you go to them about, if it's not accurate, they'll tell you it's not accurate. If it's something that they can't comment on, their go-to line has always been like, if you're comfortable in your reporting, we have nothing to add. And that means like run it. So when they vehemently denied it as much as they did, it was like, okay, all right. I mean, but again, like you're also using common sense. Like it's not just like, it's not like you're saying like, hey, you guys are going to trade Sam. No, we're not going to do that. I kind of feel like it's common sense. The guy picked the head coach. Yeah. The guy daring it's common sense. You don't do that. So when they fired him, it was like, holy shit, they actually. And so the immediate reaction, I think, from a large portion of the fan base was like, Mike Maccagnan sucks. We're glad he's gone. The other portion of the fan base that was like, kind of got a chance to, okay, yes, it was the right move to fire Mike Maccagnan. However, we just fired Mike Maccagnan after the draft, after free agents. Like that's what set in where it was like ridiculous. And I think the way that I coined it was like, it was organizational malpractice. And it wasn't the firing of Mike Maccagnan, because Mike did enough during his 4 years
to warrant
getting fired. It was when you fired him. Because in the NFL draft, like it's not like, I don't know if I can even compare it to the NBA, because in the NFL draft, like free agency, like Mike, that was the free agent where the Jets signed CJ Mosley to $85 million, Le'Veon Bell to $52.5 million, Jamison Crowder to like $50 million. Like they went batshit in free agency. Then they had a top five. They had the third pick in the draft. So they had the number three pick in the draft that year, plus like all of this stuff. And you use this guy and then fire him. The next guy you bring in has a completely different vision, where that $100 million in salary cap space used in free agency would have been spent differently with a different guy calling the shots, who now you're. So it was a big cluster F, that whole situation, man. And like when they fired him, it was the, I can't believe you just did this, followed by like, holy hell, what are you going to do now? Now, granted, like the positive of it all is it did end in Joe. It ended in Joe Douglas, a guy that has a tremendous reputation, a guy that has a lot of pull within the league, a guy who comes with a sterling reputation, a great resume. A lot of people believe in this guy. So it did end well in that regard. But from the immediate reaction of when it happened, it was like, they just did. Literally, Mike picked head coach, free agency draft, fired a month later. Like that was just wild. Absolutely wild.
It sounds like the type of thing where, I don't know, maybe 29 other NFL teams, but 28, 27 are looking at each other and probably talking like, did the Jets really just do that?
That's exactly what happened. At that point in time, it solidified the Jets, or it made the Jets look very much like a rudderless like an organization that did not know where they were going. And it was very bad, to the point where like Joe Douglas was a guy, like I said, he came in, he's from Ozzie Newsome, the school team building in Baltimore. Ozzie Newsome is known as the godfather of team building, had success there, trained underneath that. I mean, he trained from a low level scout, the Turk, all that. That was his role. Trained underneath all of that, goes up to Chicago, has, you know, only there for 1 year, because then he goes to the Eagles, wins a Super Bowl with the Eagles as he's building Howie Roseman's draft board. They win a Super Bowl. When the Jets actually hired him, a couple of the people that had like tipped me off to like the, hey, Mike's going to get fired, I reached out to him like to see what they thought about Joe, and, you know, kind of before really diving into him. And the one quote I got back was, I can't believe the Jets got Joe. Like, I can't believe Joe Douglas agreed to work for the Jets. Like, that's kind of the reputation. And now Joe has spent the last 3 years working to change that narrative, working. And I think it's happening. Like, it's such an innocuous and silly photo, but the Jets brought Elijah Barrett Tucker, who was their second first round pick, into the facility for a visit.
Okay.
And I love the photo, because it just, to me, it shows the changing of the guard. And it's Elijah Barrett Tucker and his entire family within the team's facility. And like, it's the first time he's really in an NFL building, and he's got his mom, his dad, his, you know, all these people around him. He's got his arms around him, and he wants a picture. And it's a picture from the Jets team photographer leaning back, because you have two members of the Jets organization holding up camera phones to take pictures of on their phone of this moment of Elijah with all of his family. The second person taking the photo is Joe Douglas. And he's got like, I mean, it's like the prom mom stance, because he's like bent over like this with the camera phone out. He looks like somebody's mom at the prom, and it's hysterical. And it's like, that's the general manager who picked them. taken a cell phone photo of the first round pick with his family. And they're like, text, like, here you guys go. I got it. And it's just, it's, that's the type of guy Joe is, and why like the feelings around the Jets are changing. And it's going to take time because, I mean, like I said, McCagnan ran this team into the ground. Like he is, when you look at it, it is remarkable how bad he was. And it's going to take time. It's always going to take more than one or two off seasons, but like you can see things changing. You can see things trending in the right direction. Obviously it doesn't mean anything until they start winning games, but it's getting there. It's moving there.
Hearing you talk about him in this sense, I immediately thought of the other night in Memphis for the Knicks when Julius Randle hits the back-to-back step back threes and he's running down the court, you know, get on my back. And who's there cheering like a crazed lunatic fan in Madison Square Garden going, it's like first game as a Knicks fan, but William Wesley. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Randall's talking after the game about how, you know, it's mentioned, and not the first time that word has been mentioned in the context of this Knicks team, but family. And I want, you know, it's funny. I wonder if it's more like around NBA circles of people are like, I can't believe Wes went to the Knicks, or if it's more like what took it so long to become official that Wes is now officially on the Knicks payroll. I wonder which one of those two it is. What do you think about Wes, William Wesley? Do you think he's had a similar impact as like Joe Douglas had? Obviously different, because
yeah,
Douglas is a football guy. Wes is a Wes. I don't, you know.
No, what I think is so underplayed in sports is culture. Like it is, and you lose it, like, cause you lose it in the sense of like players and you want star players, and you lose it in the sense of like a lot of the other things that can go right and wrong. But like culture is so, so important to sports. And once you have a culture and once you have that, everything else starts to fall into place, because whether it's a winning culture or a good culture, it's just not a toxic, you can't have a toxic culture. And for the Jets for several years, there was that toxic culture. And for the Knicks, for several years, there was a toxic like culture. And now you can see whether it's Wes or whether it's Tibbs or whether it's Randall or who, I don't know what it is, but you can see them changing where they like, they call themselves the Big 15. That's a culture. That's a family. Like that's, and you can start to see to a lesser extent that coming around with the Jets. And the difference is the Knicks are now winning. So it's like, I mean, you want to talk about culture and you want to talk about family, how much we love each other. Yeah, yada, yada, yada. Okay, you also have to win games. Like, that's the big, you do have to win, and that's what the Knicks are now doing. But
can you get culture without winning some games? That's the thing I always go back to, and I don't know the answer. I've thought about that topic more than anything, and I have no answer.
I don't know, because I don't know if you can have one without the other. So I don't know. It's like the old chicken or the egg. I think it's chicken or the egg talk, because, like, I don't know if you can – if you have a good culture, I think the winning will eventually come. Like the comparison I would make would be like the Seattle Seahawks. Like how many times have I know the NFL, obviously I cover the NFL, so I know them more than the NBA. So I can easily make analogies and anecdotes with that regard. But like the Seattle Seahawks, they went through like a rebuild a couple years ago where they got rid of Sherman and Michael Bennett and all these guys. They went through like their rebuild. Even in their rebuild, they still went like 8-8, 9-7. Because they just have a culture that's there and they're just going to win. And it's not going to be as good as when they're 12-4, 11-5, but even when you're rebuilding, you're still winning. And I think that it goes hand in hand. And I don't know if there's one without the other, because usually when you have one, you have the other. And it's fascinating to watch. It really is. But I mean, I would say like, think about the Knicks last year. Like, I think the culture now is better than it was last year. With the Jets, I think the culture last year was still not great. I don't think it was, and I think a large part of that was Gase. I think Adam Gase played a big part of that. Now they've got the new coach in Robert Saleh, and now he's paired with Douglas, and Saleh's got like the motivation and all. And you know, I think that it comes to making it like a family. It comes to making. I mean, what I will say is, I think good players, if you have great, great players, I mean, I don't think culture really matters anymore because talent trumps everything. But you need to have the culture, and the culture will go with winning, and then that'll draw in the better players, and all that stuff kind of just goes hand in hand in hand.
We've had two coaches here in New York sports over the last couple of years, in David Fizdale and Adam Gase. When so I'm 38. You're probably around the same age, right?
But yeah,
probably
30, younger. 29, 30. Yeah.
Okay. Have we seen two coaches that bad at the same time in New York sports in the last 25, 30 years? And they weren't just like, here's the thing. Well, Fizdale started out. I loved Fizdale. Did you like the Fizdale hire when they first made it?
I, with NBA coaches, am very much in a wait and see.
Okay.
Like, I'm very much with them in just the way. I will say that the Tibbs one was the one where I was like, I like that one. That's the one I like. But like when you see
Tibbs.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll read what people say about them. I'll read the columns, I'll read the stories, and I'll buy in loosely. But with how much I've been spurned by this Knicks team, it's more like I'm done. A lot of it with him, it was a lot of, I'm just not going to buy in yet until I see it. I did love Woody. Woody, I loved. I loved Michael. I loved him. I thought he was great.
I love Woody. Everybody loves him. Woody. Woody's
he's
the best.
One I bought in, but like everyone else has been, just show me. I got to see it for. I'm done. I can't buy into the blind faith anymore. So I was like, wait and see. Except for Tibbs. Tibbs was always like, I just have a feeling that he's a good. He's just a good basketball coach. He's just good. He's just a good coach. I wanted to see it. But Fizdale was one where I didn't not like him. I didn't like him. It was like just a. All right, just show me something. Give me reason to believe kind of a thing.
I drank the Kool-Aid early and often and ended up choking on it, unfortunately, to my detriment. It felt like, though, with Gase, there was never any Kool-Aid, unless I missed it. Was there any Kool-Aid?
No, there was none. And the reason for that is, like, so when Gase got hired, the Jets had just drafted Sam Darnold. So Sam was after 1 year. They had dealt with, at the time, the Jets were considered, like, a team you wanted to work for because you had just drafted Sam Darnold, who had shown some promise the final year of his rookie season. You had another top draft pick. So you think Sam's a franchise quarterback. You have another top draft pick. You have an owner that wants you to spend, a GM that wants you to spend $100 million to spend. They were considered a premier location. Like, they were considered like one of the top, if not the top job.
Open job. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they had some of these guys coming in, Cliff Kingsbury, Mike McCarthy, Matt Rhule, some other college names that were out there as well. It never really got a true shake, but Rhule was the big one. The Jets were considered a situation where they had their pick of the litter. Like, they could, it wasn't like they had to convince somebody to take their job. Yeah. Whoever they wanted, they were going to get. And Adam had, at one point, 2 years ago, when he was with the Chicago Bears as their offensive coordinator, was considered like the next Sean McVay, like the bright, brilliant offensive mind that was going to change the NFL. He had gone to the Dolphins, had a good first year, a not good second year, and a bad third year. And there were reports of him butting heads with players. There were reports of him butting heads with ownership and management. There were the signs that his offense just wasn't working. There were all these things that Jet fans had also seen firsthand because the Dolphins are in their division. So the Jets had seen Adam Gase struggle. So when they were – when the Jets are going to interview Adam Gase and Adam Gase is in the coaching search. Like, when his name was being thrown around, a lot of Jet fans took it as a, well, why? Like, we don't need Adam Gase. We can go get Matt Rhule. We don't need Adam Gase. We can go get Cliff Kingsbury. We don't need him. We can go get McCarthy. Like, we can get all these guys. Like, why? We don't need Adam. And then when it came down to, like, well, Rhule's not going. He went back to college because there was some like butting of heads over like his staff and stuff like that.
Okay.
Which was basically just like the Jets wanted more NFL experience on his staff. They were hiring a college head coach. They wanted more NFL experience. And Rhule was basically bringing with him all of his college buddies. And the Jets didn't really like that. And with Kingsbury's big thing was he just wanted to pick his quarterback. Like, he wanted his quarterback. So he went to Arizona where they could get Kyler Murray.
Okay.
But like Mike McCarthy was like, he won a Super Bowl with the Packers. Like,
pretty good.
Why is he? And all of a sudden it's like, no, the Jets are hiring Adam Gase. It was like, why? And then, okay, prove me right, I guess. And almost from the get-go on that one, the Jets bring Adam Gase in. There's like, he starts butting heads with Mike Maccagnan. The Jets fire Mike Maccagnan. The regular season comes and it's still like, okay, well, we have the new coach, show me something. And the Jets start 1-7. And basically from that point on, Adam was doomed. And
knew it.
I will say this, like, the one thing that Adam gets a bad reputation for and what people kind of rip him a lot for, which is unwarranted, is that he developed some like reputation as a guy who didn't care, a guy who was like lazy or anything like that. Like, that wasn't him, man. Like, he was putting in more hours than anyone else. He was basically sleeping at the team's facility, trying to find fixes for the Jets. He just couldn't identify it. And I wrote this after he got fired, that I genuinely do believe that Adam at one point might have figured out what was wrong with his offense, but he was so in his own head and probably just thought past that one. And then all of a sudden he made it more of a clusterfuck than what it already was. And it got bad. And it was, coaches always get a honeymoon. There was no honeymoon with Gase. And then when they started 1-7, it went straight to just fire Adam. Yeah. Jets gave him a second season when they rallied to finish 7-9. But then, I mean, it was brutal last year. The offense just doesn't work. It's one of those where he needs to take that offense and go back and rework it. Because with him, with the Jets, it was never about it was never with Adam about like how he can make an offense work for his players. It was about, this is the offense that tore up the NFL and set records with the Broncos and Peyton Manning. Yep. It can still work. I'm going to show you it can still work. And if it means slamming square pegs into round holes, I'm going to do it until it works. And it came in his detriment. And I think him not coaching in the NFL this year, him having the year off, is going to be really beneficial. Take a year off, reassess yourself, get back in as an offensive coordinator, and then try. He's not going to get another coaching job, but I think he's best as one of those guys with the, as an offensive coordinator. He's just not like the motivator of men. He's not like the rah-rah guy. He's like a scheme guy. He wants to out-scheme the guy in front of him, which is good if you're an offensive coordinator, not if you're a head coach. And it just never worked.
I mean, you know, big difference because Tom Thibodeau won Coach of the Year his first year and, you know, obviously had a long, successful track record with the Bulls. But I wonder how much, I don't know how much you would admit to it. Although he did kind of talk about recently, I think it was yesterday on ESPN, how much the year off after Minnesota, when we heard he bounced around and like visited some camps. I think he visited Doc in LA and I think he visited Steve in Golden State. I wonder how much that really did make a difference with him, because you look and you hear how players talk about him this year. I don't know, maybe you're better at deciphering this than me, but it feels genuine when players are talking about like, this is a different, like the guys who have had him before have talked about he's different, and guys who haven't had him before, like, listening to Julius Randle talk about this guy, I mean, what more could you ask, right?
There's no comparison with the Jets, just because they've been so bad lately, but it's the one comparison that I've drawn reading about it is that it reminds me a lot of Tom Coughlin with the Giants in like the 17, when the Giants won their, not 17, when they won their first Super Bowl in 7 with him, because he was like, going to get fired. And he was like the hard-nosed drill sergeant that everyone hated. Everyone
wanted so much
out. Michael Strahan's holding out a training camp because he can't deal with him. Tiki Barber retires because he can't deal with him. And what ended up happening was like Tom was a different guy with his family than what he was with his players, because he was like, I need to be the hard-nosed. I need to drive him into the ground, yada, yada. And his family basically said, like, you're going to get your ass fired. Like, these players need to see who you are as a person. Like, you can still be the hard-nosed, but they need to see who you are and know that you care about them. And that 2007 season, he changed. He's like, well, look, I'm going to get fired anyway, so I might as well just try to give this a shot. See if, like, me is, like, the showing them my personality and who I really am with, like, my family while also being, like, the stern leader. See if it works. And the Giants won a Super Bowl. And every player on that team will tell you he was a different guy and he was a different player. And you saw him at the Super Bowl press conference or the Super Bowl team meeting where Strahan talked about this, where he's saying how much he loves his team and he loves these guys. And like, man, we just heard Coughlin say he loves us. Like, it's different. And with Tibbs, like, you could tell he's still like the crazy, like, drill sergeant. Like, you made reference. It was like, honestly, one of my favorite moments of the game where they kicked their ass.
Houston?
Raptors. Yeah, where he takes the timeout up like 20 something points.
That was Houston. Yeah. The lead had gotten 20, down to 24. And that's not an act. He's not acting. He's fucking pissed.
Yes. And that's still him. But I think maybe the edges aren't as sharp anymore. But like, yeah, he's still the
star. Where they don't need to be.
He's still going
to
get pissed.
Yeah.
But I think he's the players are more respecting. And I also think this is like a perfect team for him, because you don't have those ego guys and you don't have those like big personality guys that would tell him to like go fuck himself. Like I saw something, maybe some tweet or something like that about like if the Nets could work with the Knicks. And I don't think they could. I do not think that you could have Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant play for Thibodeau. I don't think it works. It's not, it would not, you need like almost the pushover coach to work with those superstars.
Carl Anthony Towns had the league. I mean, the entire league was kissing his ass after his first year, second coming, rookie of the year, the whole thing. And like, you know, it's funny. I wonder if you gave Carl Anthony Towns some truth serum, maybe, you know, gave him a couple shots or something. Would he admit that he was as responsible for, because I think Tibbs has some responsibility for what happened in Minnesota, but I got to think Towns is responsible as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's a local guy too. I'm not a huge Cat fan. Like I don't think he's a little soft, honestly. I'm not soft. A big, I don't like Carl. I'm not a Carl Anthony Towns guy. Like, I know he's going to get his points. He's a hell of a talent, but like, there's been those rumors for a while. Like, how long has there been, like, the Knicks should trade for him, or like
the Knicks? Well, it's the Kentucky thing now. And it's like, if you look at, for me, it's there's two positions you upgrade on the roster. You get a point guard or you get a center who could like do some stuff. So that's why, you know, admit, I'm with you though. I'm souring on, and this, to me, what it would take to get him would be such a, it'd be the Godfather package of all Godfather packages. And like, maybe at one time, the Knicks would have been that desperate where they would have needed to take the chance. Like, okay, we got to take a chance on the talent. Now, you know what? I'm not so sure.
Yeah. I keep crossing my, like, the one thing that this team kind of reminds me a little bit of is like the Knicks pre-Mello, where you saw a poor building. You know what I mean? Like
the 2010-11, those first 45-50 games with Stoudemire and
Yes. And then they gutted it for Mello, which you had the superstar where he wanted to play for the Knicks. Weren't they worried he was going to go to the Nets too? Wasn't that like a concern that like the Nets were going to get him or something? So they didn't want to wait for free agency.
I mean, if they weren't, then they were, I mean, they were, I shouldn't talk about the Mello trade because I'm going to make people upset. They overpaid to get him. I the only logical reason is because they thought there was a real threat that he would go to the Nets, because if not, then give up nothing. Because he's, you know, he would come. But yeah, that was the rumor at the time.
Because then wasn't it too? Like, I remember the, like, because that was Donnie, like, Donnie Walsh was like the one who was like really building. Like, I felt like I saw the vision. They were building the team. And then it was almost like they gutted the roster. I thought I remembered reading something where like that was almost like what put, because Donnie wanted to wait, right? Well, didn't Donnie Walsh want to wait? And then Dolan kind of stepped in.
And then there were the, there were the rumors that Isaiah Thomas stepped in at the last minute to, throw up. I have no idea if that actually happened, but I remember those whispers have always been out there. Yeah.
So like, that's like, it just, it feels to me though, like that team was building a core.
It was.
And they got their guy in Stat, which obviously the long-term Stat was never going to work. I mean, you knew he was going
to
break down.
But he was like, compared to another sport, I compare him to like Pedro Martinez with the Mets. Pedro Martinez was like, that contract probably did not age well. I don't know if he pitched that well with the Mets, but he put the Mets on kind of on the map, and Stoudemire came here and he picked, it was like somebody picked me back into it, man.
Yeah. It's like when I was a kid, like I grew up in South Jersey. So my parents are from New York, which is where the Knicks fandom comes from. But like I grew up in South Jersey, so I didn't get MSG. I didn't get SNY. So like, I didn't get to watch New York sports living up in South. So unless the Knicks were nationally televised, I didn't get a chance to see them. Like I didn't get a chance to watch the nationally televised games. And then where I really started watching them like night in and night out was when, honestly, I started covering the NFL because I wanted a release. Because like when you cover, like I cover the Jets for a living, and I grew up a big football fan. So it was like, I've said this on our, like the podcast I do, like and all that stuff. Like Sundays in my house were like not church, but it was still a religion. Like you get up and from 11 o'clock till 12 o'clock is the ESPN pregame show. 12 to 1 is Fox. 1 to 4 is 1 o'clock game. 4 to 8 is the 4 o'clock game. Then you watch NFL primetime, Sunday night football, as long as my mom would let me stay up for it. Like, that was, like, my life. Like, that's how football engulfed me. And so, I mean, I remember my first jobs as a kid. I used to tell all my bosses, I can't work on Sunday because I have to get my schoolwork done. When in reality, I was watching football all damn day. Like, that's what I did. Football was my life. But, like, when I started covering the NFL and, like, suddenly – football doesn't necessarily become as much enjoyment because you're not watching games to eat wings and drink beer and cheer on the team, but you know, you're watching the game for what story am I going to write? And you're watching practice every day, training camp every day, then interviewing players and then trying to get stories and then watching the games and like watching the film reviews right after the games. Like when you're doing it for work and work, work, work and work, the last thing I really want to do when I sit down on my couch, you know, and I just finished writing a 2000 word story is like, flip on Thursday night football and watch more football or watch NFL Total Access. Cause it's like, even inadvertently, your brain starts spinning back into work mode of like, I would cover it this way, I would cover it that way. So I still love sports. I still love everything. So I was like, where can I find this again? And that's where I was like, shit, I'm going to Monmouth. I can get Knicks games now. And that was right around the time that like Stat was rolling. That was right around the time that Mello was coming to town. So it was like so fun to find that release again of like sports. I remember watching that core though of that they had put together and being like, man, there's something building here. And then I get why they gave it all away for Mello, because he was like, holy cow, Mello's coming here. They got the big three, and then the big three morphed from Chauncey to Chandler. But like, what I keep telling myself now watching this team and drawing those comparisons to that team is like, I just don't want to blow up the core for one guy, because I don't think that one guy is going to, with the exception of like one of the guys that there's no chance in hell that they're going to get. I don't see any one guy that's available right now that's going to be like, oh, well, they're a contender now. Like, I just don't, I don't see it. So just keep doing it the right way. And if you want to package like some end the picks to go get one guy to add to this core, that's fine. But don't deplete the core for one guy. I don't want to do that. Towns would be one of those guys where you have to deplete the core. You know what I mean? That's why I go, I'm like this on a potential ball edition, like for Lonzo. Like I go like this constantly, because like
I've gone back and forth the entire season.
Oh, dude, me too. And I keep right now I'm on the no. So right now I'm on the no train. I don't want to do it.
If it was now, just
dropped 30 in back to back nights. So now maybe more towards the yes.
He was he was like 7 for 13 or 14 or 15, whatever. It was a great shooting night from three. Yeah, if it was, you know what? If it was just the money. And it was like, all like, oh, we could just get him for, you know, what he's worth or a little bit more than he's worth, 4 for 72 or something like that. I'd be like, okay, I could, cause then you could flip it, but it's not going to be just that. Cause it's probably going to wind up being a sign and trade it's, you know, and it's just, you're before you know it, you're giving up a first round pick for the right to overpay. And it's just, So you got into the team then, and then it all went to shit. I'm curious, was it still your release as you were, even when they were really bad?
No, because that's when I started golfing. so when the Knicks turned Smart to move. Shit, I found golf, and golf became my release.
Okay, yeah, so now you've converted back from
But now it's great, because now I go out and play 18 and I come home and the Knicks are on. So now it's like ultimate. It's great. But no, so like it was rough. And it was more just because I think where it got to the point, I was never done. Like when you're a fan of a team, you're never done.
You can't be done.
Like you're never done. But where I was like, that was just a punch in the gut was when they traded Porzingis, just because I don't know how you, I loved him.
I loved him
after the fact why. And like Porzingis was a little, I am still a member.
Say of whatever you want.
Yeah, I was about to say, but I don't want, I know we still cover the Knicks. Last thing I want is like the Athletics Connor Hughes calls so-and-so, but like, I don't want that. But like, you could tell like they made the right move. Like he didn't want to be here anymore. I get it. But like in the moment when that trade went down, that wasn't what I saw. I saw Phil Jackson, why do you trade this guy? Like this, he ruined it. Now all of a sudden this new group's in, they're trading him. He was the savior. He was, at least they had KP. Like even if they didn't get this guy or that guy, they still had KP, and now he's gone. That was like, that was such a punch in the gut that I was like, I gotta breathe. Cause that pissed me off. And then the one thing I remember talking about is a friend of mine who covers the Knicks. I remember like basically being on the bridge, like ready to jump off of like Knicks fandom and being like, you got to explain it. Cause I don't understand. I don't understand why they traded Porzingis. Please explain it to me. And he goes, I mean, he's a source guy. He's talking to people within the, I don't have Knicks sources. I'm a Knicks fan. I don't have Knicks sources. He goes, they don't make that trade unless they have very good confirmation that something big's coming. Well, and then obviously what blows all that up is KD getting hurt. Like when KD got hurt, that changed everything. Then to have him get hurt, the big three not go there. They don't get the pick. They don't even get Zion. They don't get the big three. They go to Brooklyn. It was just like, I still watched them, but it was like just depressed. It was almost like it's never going to happen. And I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know when they return. It's still like I'm watching the Knicks. It's fun. It's basketball. But like, Barrett, his rookie year, wasn't that fun to watch. Randall sucked. So
again, people get mad at me for saying it. He wasn't very good. He was his rookie year.
Exactly, man. It wasn't fun. Like it wasn't fun to watch this team anymore. But now this year is when it's been like, I read all about how Randall is different. And I was like, okay. And I read it, but then you started seeing him. And then it was like, well, it's just a hot start. Then it's like just a hot month. Then it's like, well, he's not going to continue it past the All-Star game. Now you've got the superstar that is, forget the fact he's a goddamn good basketball player. He's also an awesome person. Like you see what he's like with his son. Yeah. Like that's like, now forget like Porzingis, forget Melo, forget Stat. Like I root for Randall, the player, as much as I root for Randall, the person. And then you see like Quickly coming in, and then you see Rose, who's just like, yo, I'm all aboard the Derrick Rose train. And it's just like, it's a team that's fun. Like that's I don't have any dreams this year, realistic dreams of them like Eastern Conference Finals, but they're still just fun to watch again.
But hold on.
It's a team you can pull for and relate to. You know what I mean?
But so I compare getting a superstar in the NBA to getting a quarterback in the NFL. If you have that player, you could figure everything else out.
Yeah.
And I feel like the biggest change for me over the course of the season is now I can't sit here unequivocally and be like, no, Randall's not a number one. I can't say that having seen what we've seen. And it actually, you know, it's funny. It makes me think a little bit of Sam Darnold, because I don't think anyone disputes Sam Darnold's really talented kid. I mean, I'm not an expert watching football, but like I saw some game. He showed some stuff.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out for him here because situation, whatever. Who knows what's going to happen in Carolina or wherever he ends up. Like Randall, all the pedigree in the world coming from Kentucky, right? Yeah. And then LA is kind of funky for those years. And then New Orleans and then here last year. Like, is it that nuts? Is it that crazy?
It's so one of my, like I said, my family's from New York, which is where like the Knicks fandom comes from. But I grew up in South Jersey, which is Eagles country, which is Sixers country, Flyers country, Phillies country. It sucks. Fucking sucks. But, so all of my friends are Philadelphia fans. My fiance is born and raised in Philly. So like, I can't get away from Philly sports. I hate Philly sports. I hate Philly sports teams. I can't get away from them. But
really lucky
my best
you.
Friend, my best friend, huge, like, you know, he's a big basketball guy, knows basketball. So he's what I am with football is what he is with basketball.
Okay.
Big, big Sixers fan. And I talk to him a lot because he also hates the Knicks. Like he hates them. He hates the Knicks. Like I hate the Eagles. Like I hate the Sixers. Like he hates the Knicks that way.
It's cool to be hated. That means you're doing something for somebody to hate you.
Exactly. So like he's hated them forever. So like when they got Melo, it was, he's a selfish player. You're never going to win a title with Melo. And he's always fucking right. Like that's the annoying thing is like all the, when I buy into the Kool-Aid, like when I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, he comes with like that splash of water in my head and he's always right. And it's so annoying. And so when I was talking to him about Randall, like early in the season, like the guy's playing well, he goes, he's not a number one. He's a number two. He's not a number one. He's never going to be the guy in the shit, like talking all this stuff. Now he knows now he's watching Knicks games because he wants to talk trash to me. And he's like, see, that's why. So he's watched them during this winning, like the 11, like
12, 12 out of 13. We should say we're recording this on before the Denver game. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's watching them. I got a text from him the other night and it was like, dude, he's not in sports field. He's my best friend from middle school and high school. He's not a sports reporter or anything, but it was the most validation I could get as he texted me. He goes, he's like, I don't know who the fuck this is. He goes, I don't know who I'm watching. He goes, that's not Julius Randle. He goes, I'm watching step back threes. I'm watching passing. He goes, I don't know who this is. But that's not Julius Randle. He goes, that's not him. And it's like, that's how much he's changed his game. Like he's and I was the same way. I was like, man, early in the season, man, he can be a good number two, number three on a championship team. Then it became, he can be the Robin to someone's Batman. To now it's like, fuck it, man. He can be Batman. Why the hell can't he? Why can't he be the guy? I mean, forget about the threes, which will sometimes fall, sometimes not. There's still some ISO ball in his game that I don't really like, but also he's hitting the shot. So why can't I bitch? But it's the way that, like, the biggest difference for me and where I see it now is the passing to the teammates. Is that, like, when he's, like, doing one of those, like, step backs and you look like, oh, my God, he's going to throw up a dumb pass, he finds his teammate. Or when the double team comes and he dishes it off to his team. Like, that's the stuff where it's like, you know what? Why can't he be? He's also showing that he's going to be the type of superstar that another superstar wants to play with. Like, he's not the guy that's, like, he's not the dude where you're like, I don't really want to be there. It's like, he's going to make me better. Any star that comes to play with Randall is going to be better playing with Randall than not. And I think that it's just, it's fun. It's fun watching him, man.
And the nice thing is he's already shown in his early in his career, the ability to benefit from playing with playmakers who could set him up. Because the one thing he really hasn't had a chance to do this year, which is the funniest thing of all, he was once upon a time a great finisher, not a good finisher, a great finisher at the rim. And he didn't even get to do that because he's taking all of these step backs. A couple more and then I'll get you out of here. So Randall's obviously doing his thing. We talked about Tibbs a little bit. So the NFL, I feel like, is cool for fans because you never know. This could be the year, right? Yeah. It could all fit. Yeah. The NBA, I feel like it's more of a slow build and some, usually a slow decline unless, you have James Harden who decides like he doesn't want to be on your team anymore. But most of the time it's gradual. And I, you know, the narrative this year around the team, it feels like as big a lift as they, like, I can't remember anything like this in any sport where it's just gone from like zero to 100 over the course of what, 6 months?
Yeah.
That's the crazy part to me.
It's just, and for me watching them, I think what's like, I'm just loving the ride. Like I know it's not going to end with them. Like it's not going to end with an NBA championship this year. Like I think everyone kind of really, it's just, I don't think they can compete. If they run into the Sixers or if they run into the Nets in the playoffs, it's like, I think they could give Milwaukee. I think they could give Milwaukee a run, but I just don't see them with the, if they ran into the Sixers, I think they could give Milwaukee a run, but if they ran into the Sixers or Nets, it's like win a game. I think winning a game would be like in that series, or winning two games in that
winning
series.
Two games. If they won two games against the Nets or Sixers, if they got to that point and then won two games, hold the championship parade. I don't even care.
And that's why for me, like now when I watch it, like what I can't help, and I just want to live in the moment and I just want to enjoy this ride. But like tonight's going to be fun watching them against that. Like that's going to be a fun game tonight. I can't wait. But like what, and it was the same as it was fun against the Suns, because they gave them a run. Like they were in, they should have won the game. Like if it wasn't for Chris Paul pulling that out of his ass, the Knicks win that game. Like Chris Paul is the reason why you can't stop that. There's no, you can't be pissed.
It was unguardable. And that first 5 minutes of that game was the best the Knicks have played all season.
It was amazing. And like I'm just trying to enjoy the ride, but what also is in my head and I can't get it out is like, how do they get to the next step? And that's what, like, I think that the wild part of it all is like, you don't know what Quickley is going to look like next year. You're like better, but you don't know how much better. And the same thing with Barrett. You don't know how much better. Like, you know, he's going to be better, but how much better? And obviously that can be a complete X factor in all of this, but where my brain keeps going is like, well, where do they get it to that? Where do they get to where they are Philly? Where do they get? Well, Brooklyn, I think, is just, you can cross them off. Philly is probably a better comparison because Philly built it. Like the 76ers did build that.
They did build it, not traditionally, but they built it.
Yeah, and I mean, the Sixers, obviously, like it took them literally tanking to get Embiid and then tanking continually to get Simmons, and I don't think that like the Knicks tanked to get either of those guys, and they're obviously now not going to be in a position to do that, but like how do they get to the next step? Is it the free agent? I don't see the free agent this year unless you're talking about Lonzo. I don't think he makes them a championship team. So it's
Lonzo's
like,
not a difference-making
player
in that way.
Where do you get there? That's where I struggle. I don't know where they get from here through that next step. I'll tell you what, dude, for the first time in a long time is like, I trust them. I trust management. I trust coaching, and whatever management and coaching does, unless ownership steps in, I trust what they're going to do. And I'm saying it knocking wood, but like I'm more cautiously optimistic now than I have been ever before.
Well, you said it about Joe Douglas. And I think I'm at the point with Leon Rose where I know, you know, he's may not be the most traditional guy. World Wide West is again one of one. You know, Tibbs is Tibbs. I trust Leon Rose, and I can't tell if that's going to come back to bite me in the ass, but I trust Leon Rose completely, because you know what bad leadership is when you see it. It's obvious. And it's like, this is a guy who it's, you know, again, no one, I don't think anyone was saying what they were saying about Joe Douglas, which is like, I can't believe he went there. Like Leon Rose is, again, he's been running the Knicks from afar for a lot of years, but he seems like, okay, the job is not too big for him at the very least, which is to me, that's of all the things that have gone right with the Knicks this year, I think that might be the most encouraging thing for me.
Yeah. And I think too, what it seems like the organizational mindset has changed from, and maybe it was just not by choice, but by like, we have to, is that for a very long time, and I've bought into it, is where it's like, they're going to suck, but don't worry, because in free agency, this guy's going to want to come here. Yeah. And what my buddy always used to say is, I used to tell him, be like, dude, don't worry about what the Knicks are. They're going to sign so-and-so, or they're going to get this guy, or they're going to get that guy. And he'd be like, why the is he going to go there? Why? Yeah. And I'd be like, because it's New York, you want to play in New York. And then free agency would come and he wouldn't go there. And the next guy wouldn't go there. He wouldn't go there. That guy wouldn't go there. And then obviously I think that the Durant, like I said, the Durant situation, I think, is just a outlier because the injury changed everything. But I think what the Knicks finally said is, like, we're not going to rely on just being New York, and that's why people are going to play for us. Yep. We're going to want to build a team that people are going to want to play for. Not because we're New York, but because you want to play. You see the fun that the players are having. You see the fun that the fans are having. You see the attention that's going there. And you're going to be like, I want to be a part of that. I don't want to be a part of, like, them just because they're the Knicks. I want to be a part of that team. If this was like this core group and this coaching staff and all that stuff was Milwaukee or Philadelphia or whatever, you just want to be a part of it because it looks like something you want to be a part of. And for that's where I think it will eventually be. As long as they keep on this path, I think it's going to benefit them in the long run, because I know this free agent class isn't all that juicy, but next year, the year after, like, if you keep building it this way,
there's always you're
eventually going to be a destination that people want to play for, because they're going to look at it and say, like, man, I want to be there. I want the fans to cheer my name. I want to hear MVP chants. So, you know, I want to be a part of this. Yeah. And I think for the first time, there's been that mindset change of, like, don't focus on this free agent class. Don't focus on getting this star, this superstar, trading for this guy. Let's just build a team. And you're building a team. And then it's almost like that old, like, cliche, like, if you build it, they will come. Yeah. Like, I feel like that's finally where they're at. And it took a while to get here, but now it's also, and as a fan, it's fun to go along for this ride, because now it's not like you're not focusing on the future. You're able to live in the present. Like, you're able to live in this right now, enjoy the team now, while also saying, like, you know what, maybe the future, maybe you can go get this guy later on, but still, you got this right now.
There is the present, but at the same time, there is no other than, I guess, 2012-13. There's no time in the last 20 years we could say the Knicks are good in it's or this team is good in this market. Right. Yeah. And 2013 was they didn't have cap space, and then they made the awful Bargnani trade. And we don't have to talk about that.
Don't bring up that, man.
I'm sorry. We've run out of time.
You talked about my buddy earlier who always makes fun of me. That trade went down and I got a big LOL as soon as that one. I'm like, oh, no, he's fine. It'll be great. He's back in New York. I got that. He goes, oh, you just wait. You wait on this one.
It was arguably the most indefensible in the moment move they've done, because even like Eddie Curry, this is before you were watching the D, but like Eddie Curry, when Isaiah Thomas traded for Eddie Curry, it's like, okay, if it hits,
yeah,
he could be a great, but no, not Bargnani was awful. I have to put you on the spot.
I remember one Bargnani trade. What was the one where you tried to posterize the guy and came up short?
It was the gif of gifs where he. I don't even know how to describe that play where it's like he took off from not the free throw line. He took off from like the dotted circle just inside the free throw line.
He tried to fly and he came up so short. Oh my God. It was so embarrassing. And I think that just summarized it, man. That was summarized the whole damn thing.
But that was from 2013-14 until this year, that was the Knicks. It was that Bargnani, that exemplified everything they did. Hopefully all that's behind us. I am putting you on the spot. I need two things. I need the Jets record this year.
Yeah.
And I need, I'm not going to hold you to specifics, but what do you think of the kid who looks like he's about 13 and a half years old? I saw the picture of him in the hotel room with the phone. I'm like, really? Is this?
Okay. Yeah. I'd say schedule predictions are a lot harder now because they added that extra game. So I was about to say, 6-10, 7-9. I'm like, wait a minute. Those records don't exist anymore. Yeah. I think that if Zach is as good as the Jets believe, this team can win 7 or 8 games this year. I do believe that. Like, I think they can get to 7 or 8.
Well, I saw you wrote that the plan, like, is to start him, right?
Yeah. Okay. They're gonna start him. I mean, it's gonna take him like really, really not being ready for that. Okay. As long as like he proves he's not gonna be to a detriment to both himself and the teammates, he'll start. Like he'll be there. The days of like rookie quarterback rides bench is pretty much over, unless it's like a Tua situation in Miami where he just was not ready. Like they couldn't play him. But Zach, I don't think that's going to be the case. So as long as they get like some solid play from him, I think they can win 7 or 8, because you're going to get the new coach motivation from Salah. I think the defense is actually going to be all right. Okay. And I think the offense is going to be significantly better, especially with Mike LaFleur as the coordinator. As far as Wilson, the Jets are really excited about him. I mean, they really are. And that's talking to people in the building. That's talking to people outside the building. I mean, they have not hid their infatuation with him. He's a scheme fit for the offense, which checks a lot of boxes. But what they love about him is the confidence that he plays with without being arrogant. I mean, he's one of those guys that like steps in the room and owns the room without having to say, I own the room. You know, with Sam, Sam was like a guy that people liked, but he was a little more passive. He was like that California cool, like surfer guy. Like, yeah, bro. Like his ideal fun is like sitting on the beach with a bonfire and his friends. Like, that's it. That's how, that's his fun. That's what he always a good time. Zach's the guy who's going to step in and invite everyone over to his house and they're all going to party. Like, it's like, he's just somebody who's going to be the life of the party. He's just, and I think when you have that kind of a swagger, that kind of a confidence, but it's the confidence and the swagger that does not even in the slightest bit teeter on arrogance. I think that's going to help you a lot in captivating the locker room. And then it's just a matter of skill. And when it comes to the NFL, I mean, Todd Bowles described it best. He called the draft an educated crapshoot. And that's really what it is. No one knows, like no one knows. So, but when you listen to what scouts say about Wilson, with that ability to throw off platform, the deadly accuracy, the arm strength, the ability to throw off platform, the overall talent and the Mahomes like magic when plays break down.
I saw you mention Mahomes' name in your piece.
Yeah. When you take that and you combine it in an offense that is going to be incredibly quarterback friendly and going to be designed for the quarterback, I think you have the chance for some special things. Now the Jets need still additional help. Like, they need another running back. They potentially need some help at tight end. They need another right guard still. The right tackle and center positions are, they're optimistic about it, but from my perspective, still a little questionable. The defense needs help in the secondary, still needs another pass rusher. But I think that there's a chance for a team that's going to be exciting. And when you're exciting and when you're young and when you don't necessarily know what your struggles are and you don't necessarily know what you can't do because of how young you are, you have a chance to sneak up on some teams. And I think that'll as long as Wilson isn't a disaster, this team can win 7 or 8. I think so. And if things really break their way, maybe they go to 9, but I think 7 or 8 is fair.
I think I'm going to save telling my wife about what you just said until Mother's Day, and that'll be her Mother's Day present.
There you go.
Because nothing can make her happier. This was a lot of fun. Can you just do me one last favor and tell everybody at home where they could find you and all of your content?
Yeah, so the vast majority of my stuff's all over at The Athletic. So you guys just go to The Athletic, subscribe, all that stuff. Check that out. You'll find all of my Jets coverage there. You mentioned Vork. I love him. You got to go check out Vork's Nick stuff as well. And then on social media, both the same handle, Connor_J_Hughes. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. That's the two. I have not branched into the TikTok world yet. I am not even trying that yet.
It's frankly intimidating to me.
Yeah.
I feel like it, you know, I've talked to someone who works with us, Chris Persian, and he's like, no, it's TikTok is where it's at. I'm like, I can't, just not there yet. Maybe
I
one
had
day.
A, real quick, funny story is
please.
After the Jets traded Sam, the cool thing about The Athletic is that we have, when I started, it was just Philly, New York, Toronto, and Chicago.
I remember that.
Fran. Yeah, now like that was 3 years ago. Now it's, holy shit, we're everywhere. Yeah. But the cool thing about it is like we have a beat writer assigned to every single NFL team. So when something happens, I can like talk to our Panthers guy to get like the Panthers insight. So our Panthers guy contacted me after like the Sam trade went down, and he goes, I was thinking maybe you and I do a TikTok to describe like what happened with Sam. And so in my mind, like Joe Person, who's our Panthers guy, he's an older guy. So I'm like, Joe TikToks. Okay. I was like, yeah, we'll do a TikTok. Sure. That sounds interesting. By the way, are we talking about TikTok social media? And he goes, oh my God, no, I meant a timeline. So he meant like TikTok, like a timeline of like going all the dude, in my mind, when he first said, let's do a TikTok, I texted him back. I was like, dude, I was like, I'll be totally honest. I thought we were going to do a choreographed dance right now for a second. Like I was bugging. I was like, I mean, I guess I got to do a TikTok now over Sam. No, he meant like a timeline. I was like, oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense. He goes, yeah, he goes, dude, I don't TikTok. I'm like 45. I don't TikTok.
Now I want to see Vork do what Nick beat writer could Vork do with Berman. That would be funny.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, I'd like to see them. This was great. Everybody, I say this every time Vork's on, I'll say it when you're on. If you're not, like, seriously, if you're not subscribed to The Athletic, it's like, what is it? It's like $5 a month, right?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, we run promos.
You run promos. I see it all the time, and I've been subscribed for years. But I see promotions all the time where it's you can get it for essentially nothing. It's the best, most quality coverage out there about literally whatever sport you want. I caught up on the Jets today, reading all your stuff, so, and that was a lot of fun.
Appreciate
I
feel like it, man.
Semi knowledgeable. Yeah. Oh God, it's great. Everybody, follow Connor, and thank you for coming on. Everybody out there, thanks for listening to another episode of the podcast. We'll be back with another one very soon.